There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1206 FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along for the next couple of hours. Live local talk, phone number 251-343-0106. And coming up on today's show, a lot of talk about in-state news as the former governor of the state says he may consider running for Senate in 2020. At least he's going to leave the door open. We'll get into the launching of the former governor's social media pages and this interview he did over with the folks at Yellowhammer News. That's coming up on today's show. Also, we'll talk to Laura Byrne with the City of Mobile about this LimeWire bike system, this bike share coming to town. That's going to be part of the mix as well. And a whole bunch of other odds and ends we're going to get in on today's show. But I want to start off with this, and I put the link up on Twitter to this article that I'd love for you to read along with or read at some point. You know, in the past, over the past month and a half or so, I've been talking about this lawsuit going on in California. Lawsuit about the use of Roundup, which, of course, brand name for glyphosate that so many people use. I mean, this is a full spectrum weed killer. And people in landscaping, obviously, I've talked about it in the past, my family in the world of agriculture. A lot of people use it in their yard, of course. I do the same. And this is something that's not just a chemical that's, you know, for people with certain handlers, licenses, and all that. And here is a lawsuit out in California as the plaintiff here. They're trying to link a case of cancer to use of Roundup. And I thought this was one that I thought the whole country would pay attention to, because what a precedent it could set if this was found in favor of the plaintiff here. Joining us to talk more about how they do the research into bringing cases and what is a cause of cancer, what is a carcinogen, how is that research done? And that's what's being brought up in that courtroom in California now. Joining us from the University of Connecticut, professor of the School of Medicine, Dr. Richard Stevens, joining us now on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time, doctor.
Oh, hi, Sean. Good to be here.
Good to have you on. And I guess pretty big basketball fan, huh? At UConn?
Oh, yeah, especially the women's team.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all are of national note, for sure.
Indeed.
We'll talk about this story and reading your story here about the trials, how you prove a link. You know, carcinogens, I mean, we look at items, I think the biggest one people think about is cigarettes, right, or tobacco.
That's
the biggest. How long did it take? Because you talked about the studies that were done to linking smoking with cancer, right? Back in the 40s.
Yes, and this is a highly instructive example, because beginning in the 40s, actually, there were a growing number of epidemiologic studies. That means observational studies in people. Do people with lung cancer, do they have a history of smoking more than the general population? And yes, they do. But Big Tobacco was able to say, look, cigarette smoke does not cause cancer in rats. There's never been a randomized trial of people, so the observational studies are of no value. And this really intimidated the scientific community until we realized that that's hogwash. When these studies pile up to the point where there's no other viable explanation, then it's cause and effect. And cigarettes cause lung cancer.
Would you say observational versus random? Help me understand the different kinds of studies, how
sure,
that looks.
Sure, that's important. If a randomized trial is used most often in trying to get a new treatment for a disease like cancer, where you have you take 1,000 people, and then you randomize half of them to get the drug and half of them to not get the drug. You can't do that with healthy people. In other words, you can't randomize 1,000 people to smoke
right.
and 1,000
right.
people to not smoke and see what happens to them. So it has to be observational. What you do is you get a bunch of, you get 10,000 people. They either choose to smoke or they don't. Some of them do, some of them don't. And then you follow them over time and see who gets sick. That's observational.
Okay, so with that, this what's being brought forth in the California courtroom is a 2015 determination by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, part of the World Health Organization, that glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen, right? So that was done from observational study?
Well, no. I've been on one of those panels a long time ago, and I know how the IARC works. They gather about 25 experts in three areas. Epidemiology, that's the observational studies of humans. Toxicology, which is giving stuff to rats and see if they get cancer. And then the more basic science, does the chemical damage DNA in a test tube, for example. And they take all this evidence, a panel of experts, and they have a consensus. They say, is this evidence strong enough to say cause and effect? Now, in the IARC classification, a probable means just what it says. We're not completely sure.
Okay.
A carcinogen, smoking, for example, the IARC says, yes, it is a carcinogen. It causes cancer in people.
Okay, so probable is at a lower, obviously lower level than saying it is a carcinogen. How would they arrive at that next classification, saying for sure it's a carcinogen? Is it more testing? Is it more time? Would the IARC ever move to that level with something like glyphosate?
Yes, IARC does reevaluate agents as more evidence accumulates, but the problem for most people is the definition of proof. How do we prove cause and effect? And I've talked to many of my students and colleagues, and it's very uncomfortable for people, but proof can only be defined as a consensus of experts. You get an expert panel, and you give them all the evidence, and if they say cause and effect, then you've, quote-unquote, proven it. That's it. Otherwise, proof exists only in mathematics. So this is what they do at IARC and many other kinds of panels like that, is they evaluate all this evidence. For the glyphosate thing, I did look at their classifications, and IARC said, yes, glyphosate can cause cancer in rats and mice, so that was what they call sufficient. But then they said of the epidemiology, they said the epidemiology was limited. There were studies that showed associations, but they could not rule out bias, confounding, and stuff like that.
Okay, I mean, then the idea would be, I guess, to look at people that were, from the world of landscape or agriculture, or even, I guess, people use it like I do, in your yard, and then see how many cases of cancer would be, and if that would be
right.
different than the norm.
The actual exposure of interest is glyphosate, in your body. But how do you measure that in a big epidemiologic study with thousands of people? How do you determine that?
Right.
Well, you have to use a surrogate. And one surrogate is, do you work with the stuff? Are you a landscaper, as you said? But that's not a perfect measure of the actual exposure at all. That's one of the limitations of the epidemiologic studies. Those studies that do not find an association, maybe it's because they have not measured actual glyphosate exposure accurately enough.
Okay, well, there could be, I'm thinking of a whole bunch of different factors here, but just simply, if you had somebody who had handled glyphosate a lot, but they had done all the things they were supposed to, the rubber applicator gloves, making sure to wash hands, not touch mouth, all the things they say there, not do that when they apply, they followed all the rules, to somebody who used it not a whole bunch, but didn't follow those rules, you could have somebody that had been around it a whole bunch maybe show up with very little in the system or not, versus somebody who used it a small amount, right? I mean, is that possible?
Absolutely. The dose makes the poison. It's true for absolutely anything. Iron is a requirement for our bodies, but too much iron will kill you. And it's a potent prooxidant, for example. So this is very tough stuff. I mean, the Johns Manville asbestos suits back in the 40s and 50s, a great product, but it really did give the workers a terrible form of lung cancer. So this is such a difficult thing to do, these product liability lawsuits. We need to have our products safe, but how do you prove an individual case of cancer was due to that chemical? There's so many other things that people do.
Yeah, they could have called. Right, and you bring up so many questions here. We're going to run to the news break and come right back because I have so many more questions about this. And like I said, I think this is important to watch this case out in California. I think they're... Either way, it could be a lot that comes from this. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Richard Stevens, professor in the School of Medicine, University of Connecticut. And if you've got questions, I see some coming in on the text line now. You can drop them to 343-0106. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Dr. Richard Stevens, professor at the School of Medicine, University of Connecticut, and talking a little bit about this specific case in California, but more about the research that goes into saying, okay, something is a carcinogen, is a probable carcinogen. You said the group that does this, the IARC, right? Is this kind of the standard? If you're looking for this, this is who you go to?
Well, the IARC is very highly regarded in the scientific community. And they can make mistakes. Any body can make mistakes, but they are very highly regarded.
And this is not just in the... I was reading through your story, and it's not just specifically on cancer issues. It could be a host of different things.
Well, for product liability, that's right. IARC focuses on cancer. But, of course, product liability can be for anything, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, acute renal failure, sure.
And you make this point, and this is the thing that I think you would, if I'm a defense attorney and I'm looking at a jury here, and you ask this kind of simplistic question, I would is, would this man have gotten cancer, Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, even if he wouldn't have used this product, right? I mean, was this coming anyway?
That's the essence of it. It's a risk assessment. What's the probability that this product... what's the probability it caused it? Not yes, it did, or no, it didn't, but the probability. And then, again, that's a judgment call, and it's up to the judge and or the jury to say, yes, it probably did, but you can never be certain.
Well, you write about this as you present evidence. Is circumstantial evidence enough?
Yeah, well, I think so for sure. And the smoking and lung cancer is the best example of that. But it has to be. The problem with epidemiology, the observational studies, is epidemiology is very important. It's a direct assessment of risk in human beings, but epidemiology can be done badly. It's too easy to do it badly, and there's a lot of bad, what I call bad epidemiology, with various kinds of biases, and where you can either mask or create an association, irregardless of cause and effect.
Right, where it actually is. I mean, I've often looked at spurious correlations out there. I think what I like to talk about is the rise in the use of margarine and the rise in the ability to put people into space. And I said,
those are called ecological studies.
They parallel each other, but they, one did not cause the other.
That's right. But turning it on its head, the other way of looking at that is, as the lung cancer mortality increased dramatically in the United States in the first part of the 20th century, so did cigarette consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that correlation, by itself, it's not enough, but it corroborates, it's consistent with the case control studies of individuals. So it is a piece of evidence.
And speaking of evidence, so I'm looking at some questions coming in here on our text line. Said, can the doctor explain the difference between the criminal burden of proof and the civil burden of proof?
I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, there's beyond a reasonable doubt versus preponderance of the evidence. And those definitions are a matter of opinion as well. What is beyond a reasonable doubt? For us in epidemiology, public health and medicine too, beyond a reasonable doubt is we say there's no other explanation for these observations than cause and effect.
Yeah, I'm looking at this is really interesting. Out of the audience, I have people from all different walks of life, but I'm looking at a couple of them here. One, a farmer in the ag business, said they've told us for years that Roundup is harmless, but it kills weeds and grasses and will remove paint. I've been a farmer my whole life and seen most older farmers die from cancer. Most of us farmers have known that it's bad for you for a long time. Now, I point out that My family, they all died of strokes, the farmers in my family, before cancer. But another texter here, Chris, who works also, arborist, and works with trees, he said, if we keep this up, we'll end up losing this product, which is the only product we can use against Kogan grass, which is an issue we have down here in the South, among hardwoods. He goes into kind of how glyphosate works, and works slowly, translocates into roots, but a strong mix will just kill the foliage off. And he talks about people not reading the label, earlier, not following the safety directions on this.
Yeah, well, this is where the rubber hits the road for us as individuals and for society. You've got a product that does real benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is something in it that is dangerous. Now, there's a couple of options. One is to outlaw the product, but then there's harm done there. But then the other options are to require that the amount of that chemical be as low as possible for it still to be effective, and label the product. Like you said, the instructions on use, follow those use. Also a warning to say, in large quantities, this chemical has been shown to cause cancer in rats.
Right, where people have the information, and it is on there. I would say it would be different than cigarettes, right, Doctor? Because there was no safe way to consume the cigarette. I mean, there wasn't a, hey, if you smoke it out of this side of your mouth, you'll be fine.
Well, yeah, the cigarette thing is very complicated, too. I am not for outlawing cigarettes at all. I'm very much for limiting the advertising, going after the cigarette companies for marketing to kids.
Right.
But heck, if I choose to smoke, I should have that right.
You know what? You need to come on the show a whole bunch. You get along with the whole bunch of us with that attitude. I like that. And so that's what I'm trying to get to. I'm not out here to ban anything, but if there's science out there, if there's information out there that we need and we need to know, I think that's important. And obviously, in the specific case of this trial, they're trying to use this to get a jury to decide in the plaintiff's favor.
Yes, of course. And then it can be appealed, and it undoubtedly will.
And what happens here? Like, for example, if, let's say, okay, and it goes to appeal, at the end of it, that they decide, this individual jury has decided now that this is the cause, right? That the glyphosate was the cause of this man's Hodgkin's lymphoma. Does the IARC or any other group take that information and put that back into taking it to the next level? You know how you said it was probable now, not for sure, carcinogen? Would that have any factor? Or would it make them research it more, or would they just sit where it stands right now?
No, the IARC is very punctilious about this. They only consider published scientific studies, either human studies, rat studies, what have you, basic science. And they make a real point, the IARC, of risk versus hazard.
Okay.
And they say that something's a cancer hazard, but they will not comment on risk. And the reason is that risk depends on the amount. The chemical may actually, in large enough amount, cause a cancer in a rat. But that does not necessarily mean it's a risk to humans at the low levels in some particular product. Water is required for life.
Right.
But just recently, there have been a couple of stories about some high school football players who actually drank so much water they died.
Right. Sun is required, the way last time I checked, my books on making this planet work, but too much of it, could be very detrimental, and a carcinogen at some level.
Yes. Now, the other side, of course, is that there are companies that are unscrupulous, that put bad things in products, know that there's risk, and don't tell us. And they get into a lot of trouble for that, and they should.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I wonder at what level, because we both have just referenced this. If you both of us have the product in our, in our homes, in our garage, the Roundup, it does have. You open the booklet on this, like any of the other chemicals, it tells you all these things that do this, don't do that. Does it have to have, if they decided that this was the cause, would they put more labeling on it? Would they have to run ads telling people? I mean, what level does it go to meet that level of making sure the public is aware?
This is what's called a wicked problem. They're tame problems and they're wicked problems. And wicked problems are like this. There's no easy answer to this. It's even difficult to define the question. So what do you do with a product that's very useful, that has a chemical in it that may, be a problem? And that is a complicated political, societal thing, and it's unique to each product. The Johns Manville, I remember so well, I was a kid at the time, but the asbestos in roof shingles was a miracle product, and it took years for that finally to get to the point where the plaintiffs won. They sort of quote unquote proved that that asbestos was dangerous as hell.
Right, and but there are a lot of products out there that are dangerous as hell, right? But we still we still use with the warnings, right? I mean, people are aware whether it's chemicals that have a whole host of warnings with them, and people have to have a control license to use it, or heck, you know, I mean, there's a lot of energy maybe up in your neck of the woods that comes from, you know, radioactive materials.
Well, that's, and it's also, but that's also a social issue. You may be free to use it yourself, but if your use then spills over and affects other people. This is the thing about smoking in bars, secondhand smoke. Yes, you should have the right to smoke, but you're imposing that on, you know, when you smoke in a bar,
right,
you're imposing that on the other people around you. So there's that consideration as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Stevens, great, great article, great discussion. Thanks for enlightening us today. And I want to get you back on the show soon.
Love to come.
All right. Dr. Richard Stevens, Professor, School of Medicine, University of Connecticut. The full discussion here from The Conversation, the story that he wrote, is linked through on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 1065. You want to talk some more about that? I know some text and calls been bouncing in. We can do that. We come back from the news break at 343-0106, 343-0106. Plus, the former governor of the state thinks, hey, at least leave the door open. Now, remember, he was run out on a rail, but he leaves the door open to the possibility of running for Senate in 2020. We'll talk about that as well when we come back right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
It is time we change course. It is time we lead our great state and the great men and women who sent us here. It is time for a bold move.
All right, 1237 FM Talk 1065. Is it a comeback? I am. More Bobby Bentley. And the hits keep coming, right? Let's kind of run through this. Plus, we have an update on the Spanish Fort Rouse's parking lot mooner and assaulter. Let's not forget the serious part of that story, but the mooner. We have a crying mugshot story to get to in just a couple minutes. But I do want to bring you up to date. If you didn't hear it this morning or see the links over on our social media platform, Yellowhammer News had a story that was posted, I guess, yesterday afternoon about the possible comeback, or at least maybe comeback for the former governor of the state. A story from Sean Ross over at Yellowhammer News said, this summer, Twitter and Facebook accounts representing the former Alabama governor were reactivated to coincide with the unveiling of Bentley for Alabama. That's the website. And yes, for y'all, I did the work and went through the website. The new site launched on Memorial Day. Yeah, sure. And now just hitting the consciousness of Alabama in August. News site launched on Memorial Day examines Bentley's time serving as Alabama's 53rd governor and provides contemporary updates on his life since leaving office. The platform also makes available to the general public archived digital content from the Bentley administration and both of his gubernatorial campaigns. He says on the website, Governor Bentley was Alabama's first governor to serve during the rise in popularity of digital mediums and social media platforms. Okay, which, by the way, thank you. I mean, I thought the same thing, but one of the folks over on Twitter, she did the best job of lining this out, talking about, really? I mean, if you reacted like I did, said the social media age, the burgeoning of that was all under Bentley. There's a spurious, okay, there's a, you know, we're talking about correlations, causations. That's a spurious correlation. Somehow, I guess he's wrapping himself up that somehow he led the way in this. I don't know. But as one pointed out on Twitter, Bob Riley was governor during the rise of MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, 4chan, and Craigslist misconnections. Bentley came up during the time of Snapchat. Which, that may mean a lot more. It happens during the time of Snapchat. So it goes on. It goes on. This is this sit-down interview here with Sean Ross and the former governor of the state, now back doing the skin doctor thing and the cool sculpting there at his office in Tuscaloosa. It says, in an interview with Yellowhammer News, Bentley discussed his new project, his post-public life, and even left the door open for a 2020 U.S. Senate run. Okay, here's how that lays out. I'll go ahead, because there's a whole bunch of what he's been doing since he was governor, and he's talking about God showing him the way, and he's going to do this and that. But he says here, and Yellowhammer News asks, is there anything else that you want our readers to know? Former governor says, I would just like to thank them again for allowing me to serve as their governor in this campaign season. Just remember, public service is tough, and credit goes to anyone who's willing to step into the arena. I never intended to be a caretaker governor. Ooh! Ooh, that's got a burn. A burn on Kay Ivey, right? I never intended to be a caretaker governor. If you want a public servant and see change, be ready to get bloodied. Ooh. As a voter, look for a candidate who cares about people, not just one who panders. Okay. I have to agree with the former governor. The pander bear is in full effect and has been. It really, actually, probably for the last couple of years and maybe even longer than that. I mean, the last slate of ads that came out was the biggest bunch of, you know, I go to church more and I love Trump more than y'all. You know, I do. Okay. But he's been asked, you know, specifically in this interview, would you consider a return to public office? Maybe the U.S. Senate in 2020. He said, I love serving the people of this state. Serving as governor was the greatest honor of my life. I have a heart for our people, and I believe we are all called to serve one another in some capacity. I found public service as a way to do that. I believe what is missing in public service today is loving the people that you serve and wanting to help those who need help, especially those who are less fortunate and really have nothing. If God shows me a new avenue where I can do that, I'll do it. So, is the door wide? Oh, yeah, he didn't say, hey, I'm launching Bentley for Senate 2020, but he did say, oh, you know, if that's... But if he lays down at night and thinks God's speaking to him and telling him he needs to run for Senate in 2020, I'll say this, as a person who watches this stuff, the entertainment value would be very high of having him in the mix with others. You know, you would... To have him in the primaries, that would be something. And Dalton did some research this morning because I thought he was banned from running for office in the state of Alabama, but Dalton did the research, and Jeff Poore doubled down on it as well. He just said he wouldn't. I mean, that's the cockamamie thing that came out of the whole Bentley thing, that, you know, he turned himself in, bonded out, do community service, pay back some campaign money, do these things, but there's nothing written that he can't run for office again. It's just he said he wouldn't. Then again, he had his fingers crossed behind his back when he did that. So there you go. There's the latest update on the former governor of the state of Alabama. Then I do want to get to this, and we'll grab some phone calls, too, at 343-0106, 343-0106. Looking at the crying mugshot here, our news partners at WKRG put this up, said, man accused of mooning, attacking woman cries in his mugshot. And I want to point this out before we get to the serious part of this story. Even if they wouldn't have had his name and his face, right, to be looking for, even if they wouldn't have had all that kind of information, they could have still identified this suspect by his buttocks, right? Do you remember? You remember this pivotal scene in the movie Grease? Because this is like the same. We've referenced that movie twice this week, too. Something strange is going on. Brady Bunch and Grease have been referenced multiple times, and it's only Wednesday. Remember the scene in Grease when I think Shah and I was playing, and the boys did the mooning of the camera? And then the next day at school, they were told,
that is on the right. We have pictures of you so-called mooners. And just because the pictures aren't of your faces doesn't mean we can't identify you. At this very moment, those pictures are on the way to Washington, where the FBI has experts in this type of identification.
So, see there? So the FBI with buttocks identification. So I just wanted to point that out. But yeah, so they did not need to use that FBI buttocks crime laboratory to make the arrest today of Patrick Sullivan Lynch. Arrested last night after he mooned a woman, then knocked her to the ground. The mugshot that's now up with WKRG shows him crying in his mugshot. The whole dispute supposedly over a shopping cart. Way to go, humanity. Way to go, humanity. Let's hear it for humanity. They said it happened shortly before 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Police say a 60-year-old woman was... Right, we have a 60-year-old and a 50-year-old, and this is what happens. The 60-year-old had nothing to do with it other than being there and shopping, but the 50-year-old did the mooning. Police say a 60-year-old woman was leaving the supermarket when Lynch confronted her, upset that she left her shopping cart. And listen, dude, I get upset too when people don't, when they don't park right and they don't put things up and do all that. But just keep it to yourself or go put a nasty post on social media. That's what that's for. Police say once the two started arguing, Lynch dropped his pants, mooning her. That's where he went. That was his default. He mooned her, which concealed carry, right? Then the woman allegedly took pictures of Lynch with his pants down. And at that point, he allegedly shoved her to the ground. That's when she had some real injuries. Lynch is charged with assault third degree and public lewdness. He has no criminal history in Baldwin County or the entire state of Alabama. So there you go. There's the mooning story from this morning. A little more intel coming out. And once again, even if they didn't have his face and name, of course, you have the FBI lab that was described there in that scene in Greece where they can ID people by their buttocks. Can I say buttocks? Can I say that on... I think I've said it like five times on the radio. All right, grab some calls, 343-0106, 343-0106. Look, our buddy Ron Reams checking in. Hey, Ron. Ron, you there? Well, we had him. Yeah, Ron Reams.
Having trouble with...
Well, I'm having trouble with your... Let's do this. We'll run to the break. Hold on. We'll get you a connection. Get you a wire strung out there, and we'll get you on when we come back. Let's do that. Run to the news break. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile, which has descended into a talk of butt talks on a Wednesday. We will be back. We'll clean up the show when we return.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Coming up next hour, grab your calls too at 343-0106. This new bike share, LimeWire. We talked about it, it seems like months ago when the first announcement was made, but this bike sharing thing, like where you just drop the bike off and walk away from it and you get charged and somebody else can pick the bike up and take it and they get... Listen, Laura Byrne from the city is going to explain it to us in just a little bit. That's coming up next hour with a whole bunch more. All right, go to the phones and let's go. We've got a better connection. It looks like we do. And it's our buddy Ron Reams. Hey, man.
Hey, I had to get another phone. The phone I had was not working too well.
Well listen, whatever you got to do. Yes, Ron.
First thing I want to say is Robert Bentley does not need to waste the time or the money.
Well, where does he get the money from? I thought he was broke.
I thought he was embarrassed to death.
Yeah, obviously not.
But apparently not. Now the thing is, it's just a waste of time and money. It's not his. At least it would be ours.
That's true.
And I will say that in my official capacity as a member of the Mobile County Republican Executive Committee.
So you would not be one to bring in statewide funding to back a run for Senate by former Governor Bentley.
I would vote against it, and as a matter of fact, I might even propose that.
There you go.
The other thing I want to bring up, though, is we are at, I am at the Connie Hudson Center out on Hillcrest Road, and at 2 o'clock this afternoon, I know it's short notice, but if anybody would like to come, this is Congressman Bradley Burns' town hall meeting he's having in Mobile during this time that he's away from Washington, D.C., and it's being sponsored by the Association of Mature American Citizens. I know you're surprised I'm a member of that organization. The other thing is it's also being sponsored by the Mobile County Republican Party. So if you'd like to hear from Congressman Bradley Byrne and ask him any questions, your opportunity is at 2 o'clock this afternoon at the Connie Hudson Center out on Hillcrest Road.
I
wanted to bring that up for your listeners.
Yeah, if they can get out there. I know that it was good that yesterday, I know that he took a decision maker from Washington out snapper fishing and hopefully had him just worn out catch a snapper, because he took NOAA Assistant Administrator of Fisheries, Chris Oliver. They went out fishing yesterday. He's the lead official with the federal level dealing with federal fish regulations. And so hopefully they just got him to where he said, no moss. Caught him so many fish that he
yeah, wouldn't that be great?
If we could plead our case
really
that way.
That would really be great, considering how they've been kind of telling people there aren't enough fish in the sea.
Yeah, well, we're on snapper is very specific. And, gosh, we've talked about it hours and hours on this show, and we just got to get the people that aren't from here to understand what we do. Okay, so this meeting at the Connie Hudson Mature Center coming up at what time today? 2?
2 o'clock. It's about an hour from now.
You know, just a suggestion, and I know that there's scheduling issues, but yeah, we got to have some things after 5:30. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's good,
yeah,
but
We need to mention that to Congressman Byrne, because he's the one who set the time.
Yeah, it's always like when the city council has these where they go meet off-site and do an evening meeting, and they're like, wow, look at the crowd here. Yeah, that's because people are off work.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Hey, thank you, Rod. Appreciate it. You know, people are like, wow, look at the crowds turning out for this. Well, that's what happens when you do things not in the middle of the day. Oh, I do want to get this in before we head to the news break. So yesterday, I had the story about this proposed new interstate, right? We had the story about this, what would be I-14, Interstate 16. I thought it was 14. New interstate proposal that would run through Alabama would start in West Texas, and they're saying Interstate 16. I swear yesterday they were calling it I-14. But they said Interstate 16 would go from West Texas to Augusta, Georgia, run through Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. Okay. Now, this is a formulated idea by college students, I believe, that have come up with this idea and proposed it. A study started at University of Mississippi, maybe it was Mississippi or Alabama, I'm not sure, back in 2010. And now they're continuing to work with it and argue why there should be a new interstate going through these states. Now, this is a proposal by college students, and they're doing these things, and just maybe, and what, you know, get the conversation going. Then I see this story yesterday from WTVY out of Dothan. Says, the new interstate proposal would run through Alabama, but not the wiregrass area, and everyone is not happy with the idea. Is it Mayor of Dothan or Phoenix City? Okay, the closest it would get to the wiregrass is Phoenix City. The mayor, I guess, of Dothan, Mark Saliba, is not happy about the fact that the plan passes by the entire wiregrass. Now, here, this is politics on display. Here's a proposed discussion of something that probably won't happen, but it's a thought starter kind of thing. And immediately, the idea is bad because, and listen, the mayor's doing what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to be a homer. But the mayor of Dothan says that the idea is bad because it cuts out the wiregrass. You know, if you made every road or interstate go everywhere that politically you needed it to go, it would look like, well, it looked like a lot of the roads we have here in the state of Alabama, actually. So the mayor's probably on to something here. Not that that ever happened in the past in our state, that roads were put in certain places because of political influence. That would be so cynical of me. And I'm not that kind of guy. Hour number 2. Midday Mobile all the way next.